everybody.
Hi, friends. Well, from gorgeous springtime in Salt Lake City, Utah.
It's Thank God I'm Atheist.
The podcast.
I'm Frank Feldman.
And I'm Dan Beecher.
And coming up on the show today, Dan, the Mormons are doubling down on a controversial speech given at BYU.
Oh my God, they are so dumb. What are they doing? You guys are, my, you guys, I cannot overestimate, overemphasize the badness of how dumb they are.
Yeah.
All right.
And we'll talk about that. That's coming up later on the show. First, though, we have some stuff that happened this week. News of the week. News of the world.
It's news of the world.
Dateline. Philadelphia, PA.
Oh, all right. Sure.
Let's see. Philadelphia is the home to many things, including... a real national treasure, Dan.
The Liberty Bell?
No. Of course. I mean, yes, that's there, but that's pales by comparison.
It is broken. it's just a broken bell.
It is anticlimactic. Have you ever seen the Liberty Bell?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, okay. I've heard about this my entire effing life.
I guess it's just a bell.
It turns out it's a broken bell that the nation cherishes.
It's just a piece of iron that is no longer functional as the thing it was meant to be.
Yeah. So anyway, that's there. But again, pales by comparison to the absolute national treasure of the Faith and Liberty Discovery Center.
Oh,
brought to you by the American Bible Society.
Oh, wow.
I guess you could, it's a big, big museum. It cost apparently $60 million to build.
Wow.
It opened in May of 2021. It's on the Independence Mall, wherever that is.
That's important real estate. It's where you know, it's off of where the Liberty Bell itself is. It's near where the Constitution was signed, all of that sort of thing.
Absolutely. So just prime. This is what I'm saying, Dan. I'm talking about a national treasure, right?
Yeah.
Like,
this is no slouch.
This thing's amazing. 40,000 square feet. Did I say that for the size of the museum?
Oh, huge. Okay.
It's massive. Huge museum. With the goal of uniting people and showing how faith has always played a role in our nation. According to Roy Peterson, who was president of the American Bible Society back in 2018 when they announced that they were going to be building this whole thing. They anticipated they would draw 250,000 visitors every year. My guess is they fell short of that, considering the fact that they just announced that they will be closing. I may have buried the lead there.
No, everybody. Remind us quickly. How long have they been open?
Since May of 2021, they clearly did some really good planning. They're blaming, of course, you know, the pandemic, which, you know, they opened in the middle of.
Yeah.
And that well, sucks. Well into, right. Yeah. Well enough into that. You think that they would have, I don't know, maybe, done a little extra work raising money to help them get through the fact that they would have to have known they were going to fall short of that 250,000 visitors every year.
Well, it's not fair. Like, you know, you'd think it's Jesus. That's an easy sell.
He's one of the biggest draws of all time, right?
Like, why would I have to put in any effort on that?
He fills stadiums.
Constantly. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Let's see. Apparently, though, the American Bible Society, regardless of how much money they have, which is, they have an annual revenue of more than $100 million, and they hold more than $600 million in investments. There have been questions, however, for quite a while about the effectiveness of its management and their ministry model.
Really? They're questioning their management? They're closing a $60 million whatever museum 3 years into it or something?
Yeah. Forbes magazine once described the ABS as, quote, a terrific example of how a nonprofit should not operate.
Oh.
And so.
Zing.
That's from Forbes, everyone. known for their zingers. And you know, we should maybe just mention American Bible Society. If you're not familiar with it, it's what it sounds like. They like the Bible. And they promote the Bible and they give away Bibles and they have they've done translations and different work on about the Bible.
Sure.
And they probably thought that this museum was just a shoo-in, right? Like that this was going to be their big accomplishment.
Yeah.
Promoting the Bible.
The crown jewel in somebody's crown. Yeah.
The center, the museum. I guess I can still talk about it in the present tense. It hasn't closed yet. It includes exhibits entitled, The Freedom of Faith, The Spirit of Liberty, Struggling Toward Justice.
Ooh.
And it will remain open to the public until March 28th. And so if you have tickets through the 28th, you're good.
Apparently. Well, here's the
thing.
Those
of you listeners out there who might be in the Philadelphia area. Well, if you have tickets after that date, they will refund your tickets.
Well, here's the thing. Those who follow me or are friends with me on Facebook know that I was aware of this story because I am going to the American Atheist Convention in Philadelphia that is coming up. And I will be there in time to go and see this monstrosity. Now, do I want to pay money to do it? No, I don't. Right. But do I want to maybe walk past it and gloat and maybe moon some of the staff there? You never know. You never know. So if you're also going to be at American Atheist Convention, say hi to me. and maybe we'll organize a walk over to the Bible museum that failed just to commemorate. We'll have a candlelight vigil.
Aww.
And it'll be to laugh at them. They'll all come out and they'll be like, oh, thanks guys. And we'll be like, ha ha.
Aww.
A candlelight gloat. I think that's a new thing that needs to be invented.
That's very nice of you, Dan.
Yeah.
I'm very big of you. Big of you, in fact.
Well, I'm a big fan of bigamy. Uh-huh. Okay. I'm going to move us on to France. I have all quasi questionably good stories. I have good stories, but none of them are all the way good. And some of them are like, are they good? Anyway, the first one starts in France, where I think we talked about it several years ago, that they had had a study done, a report that was done in 2021 that estimated that 330,000 children were sexually abused over 70 years by priests.
This is a good story.
Of the Catholic Church. Wait for it. Wait for it. Don't get ahead of me.
I'm just saying, Dan, that doesn't sound like a good story.
That's not the good story. The good story is that because of this, the church has had to set up a fund and reparations have been doled out since then.
Okay.
And this year, so basically right now they're up to almost 500 people who have received reparations for this. And it's not, a life-changing amount of money. It's usually in the sort of the high end of it, I believe, is 60,000 euro.
Wow.
Which is not anything to sneeze at, but it's at least something.
Yeah.
And this is, that's for the people who were obviously most egregiously
abused. And then, you know, it's less. How would it feel to find out that, oh, no, your abuse is worth less than someone else's abuse? That's
how do you put a value on it? Right.
Like you don't. But they also, there's also non-financial help, which is like support for victims.
And that seems, that's important.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we'll see. I don't know how good that support is. I don't know. You know, the article that I read mentions things like helping to write letters to their abuser or whatever, which could be very therapeutic, I suppose. But yeah. Like, we might need to do a little more work than that, France. I think we might need to go a little deeper than writing a letter. But
well, at least it's just not sending a postcard.
You know? Weather is beautiful. Wish you were in jail.
God damn it. All right. Dan.
Yeah.
It's Ramadan. Did you know
that? Ramadan, a ding dong.
Yeah, it's happening. It's right now. We're in the middle of it.
Yeah. I hope you're fasting.
This year, it runs from March 11th to April 9th, 30 days long. I always love this when they talk about Ramadan, too. The article is like, Ramadan is expected to last 30 days.
With you never know.
With fasting starting on March 11th and predicted to end on April 9th. What is going to change?
There's a dude who probably is like, okay, you're done.
I'm hungry. I'm tired of fasting.
Here's the question. If the person in charge of saying Ramadan is over just kept it going indefinitely, I want to see the bell curve of when people just start dropping out. Mm. I'm done. I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Well, look no further, Dan.
Oh,
then Nigeria.
Okay.
Where in their northern states, and a few of the northern states, I guess, are predominantly Muslim. And sure. So back in not too long ago, actually, they've allowed Sharia courts and a sort of a Sharia legal system to operate concurrently. Alongside the secular system that is for the non-Muslims, right? Sure. So that means that there are Islamic police known as Hisba. Mm. And they, I guess, Ramadan is like their favorite time of year.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is enforcement time.
That's when it kicks in, baby.
Because, you know, people are hungry and they might be Muslim, but they really fucking don't care. Right.
They're Muslim, but they're snacky. So
including, so there were 11 people, arrested on, this past Tuesday. So 1 week before the show comes out, so 11 people were arrested in the northern state of Kano. They were seen, eating food during the Ramadan fast, which is a daylight fast, right? Like after the sun officially is down, you can eat, right? And so it is a holiday month of sorts, right? It's time for big feasts because, you know, you didn't get to eat all day. Yeah. And so families get together and blah, 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 blah. But nonetheless, some people were peckish, including a woman who was selling nuts out on the street. And she was seen dipping into her bag and slipping some into her mouth.
Oh,
'cause she's hungry. Poor dear.
You are under arrest. I saw you eating nuts.
Apparently the Hisba like to hang out around markets.
Yeah.
Because those are sort of the hot spots of snacking activity during the month of Ramadan. And that's where they found these people.
Oh my God.
They say the official spokesperson of the Hisba says, "We don't arrest non-Muslims because this doesn't concern them." And the only time they could be guilty of a crime is when we find out they cooked food to sell to Muslims that are supposed to be fasting. So you can get in trouble for selling food. This Muslim person is the one who came to you asking for food, offering you money, and you're supposed to be like, no. I know that this month you're not allowed to eat right now, and so I'm not selling to you.
How do you card someone for being a Muslim? How do you, like...
Yeah.
Like, I'm here to sell food, but not to you. You in the burqa, I'm definitely not to you, but I don't know about you. You got a beard, but that could just be a weird, that just could be a fashion thing.
Yeah. You have to be, I mean, you have to be careful what food you serve to somebody in a burqa anyway, right?
Like, that's true.
It's got to, I would imagine it's a lot of skewers, right? to slip in through the, you're not going to serve them like, you know, fried chicken, right?
No.
Because it's like, how are they going to eat it, right? Like, it's got to be on a little, it's got to be food on a stick.
I assumed that you're just talking about the dynamics of the
yes,
the actual clothing,
the actual functionality.
I thought you were talking about like, no, you can't, you know, braise it in wine or something because they can't drink alcohol. All right. Since we're on the other side of the world, I'll just take us over to India.
Ooh.
Where a law has gone into effect in one state in India. This is the state of something. Assam?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We all know, everybody knows Assam.
I'm glad you told us where it's at. Yeah. Now I know.
Thank goodness for that. Where they have passed the Assam Healing (parentheses) Prevention of Evil Practices Bill. And so it's funny because as I sort of read about this bill, it was like the guys inside my brain were like, yay. Oh, boo. Oh, yay. Oh, no. Oh, wait, boo.
Okay.
So I'll let you guys make up your own mind. This is a bill to promote science-based medicine and prevent, quote, magical healing. So so it is to eradicate, this is language from the bill, to eradicate the non-scientific healing practices with ulterior motives for exploiting the innocent people.
Okay.
And thereby destroying the fiber of the public health of the society.
Okay.
That sounds great.
That sounds wonderful.
I am on board with that. Uh-oh, got a little problematic when we realized that the ruling party there in that state is also the same party as the Hindu nationalist Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
Oh, no.
And this is explicitly... The bill was written in such broad language that they can arrest a Christian for just praying over a sick friend.
What? Like a sick friend who's also seeking like medical care. Like medical care.
It could technically be considered faith healing, and that wouldn't be legal. Here's the thing. I was skeptical about this. You know, when I hear about Christians hollering about prejudice against them because of the promotion of science or whatever, my eyes roll pretty quickly.
Right.
But then I read about one government official who literally said, quote, "We want to curb evangelism in Assam. So in that direction, the banning of healing will be very, very important milestone." This is Himanta Biswa Sarma, who's the chief minister of Assam, who said, "Healing is a very, very dicey subject, which is used to convert tribal people."
Oh.
Now, that's true. I mean, the way that they convert people in, you know, in sort of very rural areas is they make big magical promises.
Mm.
And, you know, those people don't have the means to really educate themselves well. So it's like, oh, okay.
Mm.
So, yes, they are. They're saying that that it's not about, you know, you can still be Christian or whatever, but what they're really trying to do, or it seems like one of the things that they're trying to do, it's that ulterior motive thing in the bill that I was saying.
Mm.
It's they're trying to curb evangelizing and proselytizing through like healing practices. And again, I think that's probably good, but they're probably doing it because they're shitbags. And it's like, I don't know what to think about it. I think a law like this should be passed everywhere.
Yeah, like totally.
If you want to use faith healing, prove that it works.
Right.
Run some independent studies and let's look at the data.
Right.
And then if it works, guess who's going to be on board? All of us. We're going to be very excited about it.
Oh, yeah. All you have to do is pray. All you have to do is just like put your little hands together.
Yeah.
Close your eyes, bow your head and mumble some things to somebody who's not, you know, there.
Who's invisible.
And you get better.
Great.
Well, that sounds great. Sign me up for that.
Psychic surgery. Wow. That sounds amazing. Prove that it works.
I just use my brain, Dan.
You just literally, have you seen psychic surgery where they literally just like pretend to shove their hand? They do like, they shove their hand behind their other hand and make it look like they're burrowing into a person and then out a gob of goo and it's all bloody and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. That's if that stuff. Worked, if you could pull out cancer just with your hands and I don't need to be like sewn up afterwards, I'm on board, man.
Yeah.
Prove it. Just prove that it works.
You're asking for too much. They're too busy healing people to stop and like study how it works. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Just stop interfering with all the good I'm doing in the world.
God will not be mocked by you trying to prove that it's real. Also, somebody pay me $500 because I just did a thing.
Oh, my God. Dan.
Yes.
France. We're back to France.
Back to France.
And abortion. Dan.
Uh-oh.
And the fact that it's now constitutionally protected, right?
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's constitutionally required.
No. It's just a right that has been defined in
the Constitution.
Now it's in the Constitution.
Oh.
It's protected right.
As if rural Americans didn't need it another reason to hate France.
I mean, you're not allowed to show up to France pregnant anymore, or else they just abort it. They're so gung-ho on abortion.
They just regularly just take babies out of people.
It's really, I mean, it's kind of a mess over there right now, a gory mess. But
it's not
the first time France
has what?
Descended into bloody chaos.
Well, I will say this. I wouldn't put it past the French to pass a law like this or to, you know, to amend their constitution in this way just to keep rural Americans out.
This also keeps out the stupid Americans?
I mean, we like abortion, but that is much better. This is a side effect that is worth it.
Where's the pate? So you're right, though, Dan. The American reaction amongst certain people, including Franklin Graham, has been kind of nice. He had this to say. Just because something is legal doesn't make it right. France just became the first country in the world to make abortion a constitutional right. After the vote, the Eiffel Tower in Paris was lit up in celebration with the message, "My body, my choice."
Mm-hmm.
French President Macron said it was a matter of, quote, French pride and sending a universal message. One day, the leaders who have pushed for abortion will have to stand before Almighty God and answer for the lives they were taking. Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to have to stand before God. They're
killing what we should be protecting. Abortion is mere murder, not a choice. Mm. And that, see, anyway. And it's a right. It's not a requirement.
Right? Yeah.
Like, you, yeah. Right. Like you can be in France and not have an abortion. That is totally allowed. Just like you can.
I mean, it's freedom looked of down speech. On. It's obviously looked down upon, but you know,
freedom of speech. You can say whatever you want or not say something. Right.
Right.
It's the same thing. It's just a right.
You can say hateful stuff all you want, Franklin Graham. Yeah. Or, you know, and that doesn't mean you should.
No,
you definitely shouldn't.
No.
But we believe in your right to do it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, here's the thing. I think we need to be much louder as lefties
mm-hmm.
about bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
Then we have, I've beat this drum before, but I'm going to beat it again because I know for a fact that if you went to Franklin Graham and you said, okay, you are a match, you have to give up a kidney. And give it to someone else and it'll save their life, but you have to do it. You don't have a choice.
Right.
He would rail against that because you can't just use his body to support someone else's life. You can't just force him to use his body. That's the same thing, dude, as abortion is just even if we granted that little zygote or whatever could be considered a human baby. You still don't have the right to tell a pregnant person that they can be forced to support that life with their body and risk their life for that other. You just can't.
Yeah. It's also not a life. So there's,
I mean, there's some question.
Well,
there.
It's not a human life. Right. Like it's not sitting there, you know, pondering its existence. Right. Or,
yeah. It's living human cells.
Sure.
So like I'm okay with saying that is a reasonable argument to say that those are, but you know, also a tumor is living human cells.
Right. We get rid of those all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't abort your tumors. Franklin Graham.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they probably, I mean, constitutional right to abortion. It would have been nice, I guess, in a way for them to go the step further. The constitutional right to body autonomy. Right.
Yes.
Like that should be the end goal.
Yeah. That's what we're really talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I am finally going to whip us all the way back here to these United States.
Oh, thank
where
God.
We're in the great state of Wisconsin.
Feels good to come home. Always does.
Yeah. You and I have been to Wisconsin. We've had some lovely times there.
Yeah, I like Wisconsin.
The Supreme Court of Wisconsin has made an interesting ruling.
Mm.
Now, this is to do with, it's a little complicated, but a Catholic charity that is not the Catholic Church, but it is a Catholic Church affiliated charitable organization.
Okay.
It has been ruled that they are not exempt from paying Wisconsin's unemployment tax. Now, this is a tricky one because, you know, this is still a tax exempt organization.
Okay.
It's a charitable organization.
Sure.
But they have employees. Those employees need to be protected.
Right.
So And that's what unemployment tax is all about,
right?
Is protecting employees. But up until now, if you were affiliated with a church, you didn't have to pay unemployment tax.
Right.
Well, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin has now ruled that because this is not a church, it is a church affiliated organization.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have, they are responsible for this tax.
Okay.
Now, well,
that's good, because I mean, like, it's not like this organization, that its employees are ministers, right?
Right.
Like, these are just, yeah, these are people, you know, doing, yeah, jobs.
Yeah.
Like real jobs.
Well, here's the thing. So, it's funny because the Supreme Court of Wisconsin was very divided on this, and the dissent was angry about it.
Oh, I'm sure they were.
The dissent came down pretty hard on this one. Justice Rebecca Bradley, who's one of the conservative judges. Man, I wish we didn't have a delineation between conservative and liberal judges that was so obvious in this country, but there you go.
Yeah.
She apparently began her dissent by quoting a Bible verse.
Well, that's good.
That's a strong start.
Your legal opinion.
Good opening. Yeah. She said the majority's misinterpretation also excessively entangles the government in spiritual affairs, requiring courts to determine what religious practices are sufficiently religious under the majority's unconstitutional test. Guess what? You guys are the ones, you have to decide this shit regardless. Like, if the majority had ruled the other way, they're still in that same position. They're still having to, like, make these lines, draw these lines. So that argument makes zero sense. Here's the other thing. Deciding that one organization, you know, one charitable organization that's not affiliated with a church has to pay it, and that another organization that is affiliated with the church doesn't have to pay it, is literally giving special consideration to a religion.
Yeah.
And that's kind of unconstitutional, question mark? Like, there's this whole thing about the government's not going to get involved in religion and stuff, but that's kind of the government getting involved in religion, if you ask me. This will definitely be, appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, where they will very quickly, I'm sure, slap it down and say that, you know, if you've got the word Catholic anywhere near your thing, you don't have to pay anything. And
here's some extra money.
Yeah. You didn't even ask for it, but here's a couple million. Just go ahead and have that and knock yourselves out. Well, if you have anything you'd like to say about anything that's happening in France, in Africa, in India, whatever, please feel free to write into us, podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or call and leave us a voicemail message. We'd love to hear from you. The telephone number is 424-666-8442. Stick around. There's more show coming up.
Well, Frank,
Dan,
we got some audio for you. This is from a guy named John MacArthur. He's a preacher. He's a
peach of a preacher, I'm sure.
I found out about him because he was in a bit of a dust up, because he recently said that Martin Luther King Jr. was not Christian at all, because he had fallen victim to all of that woke nonsense of, like, you know, saying that they're that black people deserve rights and stuff. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
He might, I, you know, one hates to cast aspersions too liberally, too quickly.
Mm.
But I think he might be racist. I think,
Dan,
I think he might.
You better just be careful how you're throwing that word around.
Well, Dan. Here's what I'll do. I'll let you and our listeners decide based on this clip, which has nothing to do with Martin Luther King Jr. The Reverend Doctor. No, it's on a different subject. I'll let him speak for himself.
Okay, good. Good.
It is a little strange that we have such an aversion to slavery because historically there have been abuses. You know, there have been abuses in marriage. We don't have an aversion to marriage particularly because there have been abuses. There are parents who abuse their children. We don't have an aversion to having children because some parents have been abusive. Of course, it can have any kind of situation where abuse can be involved. The reason unions grew up in America was not to free slaves. The reason unions grew up in America was because there were people who had businesses and they were abusing their employees. So to throw out slavery as a concept simply because there have been abuses, I think, is to miss the point. In any kind of human relationship, there can be abuses. There can also be benefits. For many people, poor people, perhaps people who weren't educated, perhaps people who had no other opportunity, working for a gentle, caring, loving master was the best of all possible worlds. If you had the right master, everything was taken care of. So we have to go back and take a more honest look at slavery and understand that God has, in a sense, legitimized it when it's handled correctly by saying this is the way you're to view your relationship to Jesus Christ, the perfect, all wise, all loving, all compassionate, all beneficent Lord, and you willing to be his slave because of such unique care provided by him. If you ask me to be a slave, I will simply ask you one question. Who is my master? If you tell me that my master loves me with a perfect love from which I can never be separated, if you tell me that my master will pour out all his riches on my behalf and hold nothing back, if you tell me that my master knows me and knows what is best for me and in every case will provide everything that is best for me, if you tell me that my master will use me in the advancement of his own enterprises and that I will share in his reward, if you tell me that my master will make me as a son and give me all that he possesses as an heir of his own true son, if you tell me that my master will forgive all my sins and reward me forever, I can't sign up fast enough to be a slave of that master. And that is the issue. Slavery is not objectionable if you have the right master. It's the perfect scenario. Everything you need is met and more in a caring, loving environment where God provides all that we need through Christ. That's what it means to be a Christian.
Well, how about that?
Yeah. I mean... he describes this slave owner that is a complete and utter fantasy because I mean that clearly that's what slave owners were doing. They were showering their slaves with riches,
right? And promising them as a son that they will then receive all of the everything.
Right.
Yeah.
This abhorrent practice that the world has basically all of the civilized world, all of it has come to the same conclusion that it's abhorrent. It's an ancient barbaric practice that went on. Well, it never should have happened, but then it lived on far too long. Yeah. And there's still sadly are examples.
Yeah. Of still slavery happening
throughout the world. This guy though, he likes to imagine his little perfect slave owner that he would be owned by.
Yeah.
Right. Like that sounds great because he gets all these like riches and whatnot. But I think he in sort of life fancies himself more as a slave owner,
right?
Than yeah, a slave.
I think you may have hit on like the little sleight of hand he did, because you can't say slavery's not bad. What if God was your master?
Right.
God isn't.
No.
That's not. But I do love that he ended the thing with just that, you know, Christianity is slavery. Oh, God. That's literally his point. That's the point he was making.
You know, I want him to succeed in spreading that message.
Christianity is slavery.
I want that to be the message that really effing gets out there, right?
Yes.
That tagline, because, you know, he's probably not that far off.
No.
In defining what the Christianity is and the human role in Christianity and relationship to God. I have a hard time quibbling with his interpretation of Christianity. I think it's abhorrent.
Right? Yeah. It's not a reason to stay Christian.
Exactly. Right. But if that's how he wants to interpret it, fine. He's not going to attract a lot of people.
But you're not wrong. Yeah.
Go with that, John MacArthur. Let's see how far you get with that.
All right. Jesus, well, we had some people write into us. So let's get to them. This is from Fred, who is writing about our November election and says, I struggle to understand in our current situation why any liberal-minded, anti-theocratic person would vote anything but a straight Democratic ticket.
Right.
The Republicans are pushing back on all social issues most progressives care about, and they are turning more theocratic. Then I learned of the idea of accelerationism. Maybe accelerationism? I don't know. Accelerationism. As I understand the idea, it is that to reach some sort of post-capitalist utopian society, some think it will only be achieved if things get even worse.
Ugh.
Hence, a second Trump term is a route to revolutionary change. I find this idea horrifying and morally bankrupt. If you were a straight white male, even if a leftist, you'll probably be okay. However, in my humble opinion, it's very unlikely that it will lead to the country they want.
Right.
And even if it does, to get there, you're asking for others to suffer under the hellscape of a second Trump presidency.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyone who does believe that, you're basically falling for the same fallacy that the Christians love, which is, you know, things have to get all the way bad for the apocalypse to happen. So the way we get Jesus here is by making things all the way bad.
Yeah.
It's magical thinking and it's not good. I will say I am not on the bandwagon that you have to vote a straight Democrat ticket. I don't think that that's true at all. I think in an individual local election, make your decisions wisely based on what you're seeing out there. There may well be a very corrupt Democrat running against a moderate and
reasonable, honest
Republican. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in that case, I'll vote for the reasonable, honest Republican over a corrupt Democrat any day of the week.
Yeah.
It's just on the national stage that we need to be a lot more cautious.
Yeah.
And I
would agree with that. Because shit's terrifying.
Yeah.
When you look at the GOP these days.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Indeed.
So that is the message, right? And you
can't make things better by making them worse first.
No, I think that's such a risky. First of all, it is just flat out risky, right? Like,
right.
Like I know that we look at like the American Revolution as like this, like, oh wow, the American Revolution, it was great, right?
Right.
It was not a foregone conclusion what everybody was gonna get at the end of the revolution, right?
Right.
I think we lucked out, right?
100%.
You know, you look at the French Revolution. Weren't there two of them? People, right? There was that first really nasty, ugly one, right? Like,
sure. I definitely know a lot about French history, so I'm...
Well, but just revolution and throwing off, like whenever there's been great upheaval in societies, for the most part, it seems like not everybody gets what they thought they were going to get. The Iranian Revolution, right? There were a lot of liberals who were all for throwing off the Shah, right? And they didn't get what they wanted after the revolution. In fact, they got exactly the opposite of what they would have wanted. So like, the other revolution thing is terrifying as a concept.
The other thing that you need to think about, even when you think about the most successful revolutions in world history, you got to think about how long it was bad before that revolution actually came to fruition.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
Because, maybe things being really, really shitty is a catalyst for big change.
Yeah.
But also, it's got to be really, really shitty for a while. Like,
and really shitty.
Yeah.
Like, I know that a lot of Americans are in a bad spot right now, right?
Yeah.
I just don't think they're at revolution point, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. I just don't think it's bad. I'm not trying to diminish how bad it is.
The Americans who are at a revolution point are the wrong ones. They're on the other side.
Right. But they're just crazies, right? Like, objectively looking at their lives, right? Like, are they really to the point of like, are their lives so bad that you're going to take up arms against, like, it's you'd have to be fucking nuts.
Yeah.
And they are. That's what's scary, I guess.
Are there enough
of them that are that fucking nuts to actually do it? I don't know.
But here's the other point that makes, which is that like things getting as bad as they can get does not guarantee that the populace, the sort of, you know, vulnerable to propaganda populace, will see who's actually at fault for that and revolt in the correct direction.
Yeah.
So like if things getting worse might make things worse.
Yeah.
Okay.
reform what we have, not throw it out.
Yeah. It's not as clean, but it's better. This is from Robert, and we talk about things like abuse a lot on this show. Including sexual abuse by clergy and by, you know, all of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Robert is writing in regards to the story we did last week about Liberty University being fined because they were pretending like they had a super safe campus and then like not actually doing any of the things they would be needed to keep their campus actually safe.
Right.
And Robert writes, I know you're trying to keep it light, but $14 million is not the point. Accountability is, and no number of money is going to deal with the actual damage done to the victims of abuse and rape.
Yeah.
We should listen to what the victims need and be there to support their pain, as it is a very serious problem. I've been abused, and our female and transgender friends have it so much worse. I know you're both fighting the good fight and you are pillars of the community. Well, don't, that's probably not true. Don't worry about us being pillars. Let's not hold us up as anything, but I'll let Robert continue. So I feel bad pointing out that you missed one on this. So please revisit and maybe provide some contact info for places for people to go if they've been abused. And I thought that was a very good idea. So I've looked up a couple of phone numbers. If you have been abused, there are lots of places for you. Now, the resources that I'm about to mention are in the United States, but I'm sure that wherever you are, you can find help. And I encourage you to seek it if you're struggling. There's the National Sexual Assault Hotline, and that number is 800-656-4673. And there's also, we'll just throw out the National Domestic Violence Hotline, which is 800-799-7233. So there's those. Don't hesitate to call them. They're all open 24 hours a day. And, you know, get the help that you need.
All right.
And I would also, so now I would like to mention, this is the second week in a row. I don't like to do this, but this is second week in a row. I'm going to mention a review on iTunes.
Yeah.
From us. This person gave us 5 stars, which is the only proper thing to do. So please, everyone, go out and give us 5 stars if you haven't done already. Maybe write a review, but this one says, I just wanted to read this because I wanted to point it out. Great pod, would consider patronage, but as an ex-Catholic, I don't care for Mormon magic powers.
Oh,
can you bestow Catholic ones? How much to become a bishop? And if not, can you guys get yourself ordained by an ex-Catholic to freely distribute their powers? Guess what? We can do whatever the fuck we want. So I'm putting this out there for all of y'all. I will bestow on you, if you become a patron of this show and you give us just a little bit of your money every month or week or whatever, and then you let me know what kind of magic you want, fucking dude, I will give it to you. You can be a Catholic. You can have Catholic magic powers. You can have Protestant magic powers. You can have voodoo magic powers. You can have Hindu magic powers. I'll give you whatever you want. You pick it. Don't be weird. There's no excuse not to give us money just because we're giving out the wrong priesthood. We can give you the powers of literally anything. Because we're that good.
Right.
We are that good. Right. Santeria. Do you want some Santeria?
We'll give it to you.
Yeah.
We'll give it to you.
And then I have one more thing, one more item of business that I just wanted to take care of quickly, which is a farewell to Grandpa Jerry.
Oh.
One of our longtime listeners and such a sweet, sweet soul who would write into us every now and then, who has passed and provided that we would know about it, like made sure that we would find out about it. So I will miss you, Grandpa Jerry. And thanks for all the laughs.
Oh, that's really sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. Do we have anyone to thank other than Grandpa Jerry?
We do indeed. And we have a new patron on Patreon by the name of Michael. Michael is a new teacher in the Aaronic priesthood.
Oh, congrats. Or a teacher in the Catholic priesthood. It doesn't matter.
I don't think they ordain teachers.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay.
We might want to, I don't know. Well,
you're whatever you want to be. Anyway, yeah. Thank you so much. That's amazing.
Yeah, and as always, and if you'd like to join Michael in supporting the show, you can do so by going to thankgodimatheist.com and click on the support tab. And then, as always, Dan, we have our top donor to thank, our Lord and Savior, Davis.
More show coming up. Well, friends, I think we may have talked about it, Frank, a while ago.
What are you talking about?
The talk back in 2021.
Which talk, Dan?
This was a speech given by a higher up in the Mormon Church, one of the big dogs.
Yeah.
And by big dogs, I mean Basset Hound, because if you look at this guy's jowls, the way his face droops, holy shit!
There's really not much of a face left.
It's like someone opened the Ark of the Covenant just a little bit, and he melted some.
But he's like, and we're talking about Jeffrey Holland here.
Jeffrey Holland, yes.
Who, he considers himself quite the intellectual heavyweight,
mm-hmm.
right, of Mormonism and of church leadership and whatnot. And you can just hear it in his intonation. He's he's very, very proud of his intellectual prowess.
Yeah, and, which is why he was speaking to a group of people at an institution of higher learning.
Mm-hmm. Of which he was once president, right?
Was he?
Wasn't Jeffrey R. Holland?
I think the other guy, I think Oakes was.
Oh, okay. He was, well, then he had some soup. He's been direct, some direct
maybe
supervisor.
He was. I don't know. They probably all were.
Yeah. I think he's had some very special role over BYU. I don't know what it is then. But anyway, so nasty little speech a few years ago.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It has come to be known as the musket fire speech because he started to talk about, I mean, it started as a sort of not quite innocent, but mostly innocent metaphor about like people in Latter-day Saints back in Illinois building their temple, working with a trowel in one hand and a musket in the other. Mostly because they had pissed off all of the people around them so badly that they were frequently attacked and that they frequently attacked back.
Right.
They were sometimes they were just the instigators.
They were really, really bad neighbors. And while that definitely does not justify violence against them, they were bad neighbors.
Well, they were also violent. So it's
then that justifies it, I suppose.
This was the exchange of violence. Anyway,
it does not justify it.
But he's just, what he's trying to do is set up a metaphor about defending the faith.
Oh, yes.
You know, onward Christian soldiers, all of that sort of nonsense. And then it got into the weeds a little bit with the musket fire thing. He started talking about how, you know, they should be defenders of the faith with their trowels and muskets. And then he quotes Dallin Oaks, who's another old man leader of the church, the next prophet, assuming he outlives this other guy.
Yeah, fewer jowls.
Yes, a much tighter faced man, Elder Oaks, who said, "I would like to hear a little more musket fire from this temple of learning," meaning, you know, the BYU.
Yeah.
Basically, like the whole speech was about, we are this institute of higher education,
quote unquote,
is not churchy enough and is not, you know, is doing too much teaching worldly things, like, you know, the science of stuff
right,
and current thought on things like LGBTQ issues or whatever, because why would an institute of higher learning care about what the science has to say about, you know, gay and trans people or whatever?
Right. Yeah. No.
But as he's pointed out, a house divided against itself cannot stand. So let's make sure that we fall on the right side of that. And it was all about, anyway, the musket fire thing got real out of control. And suddenly it was like, we need to have musket fire, not against us in the church, but musket fire against bad thinking about gay people. It came very close to saying we need guns against gays.
Violent metaphors.
Yeah.
Toward members of your own community, that you don't like, maybe isn't a great metaphor. Right.
Yeah.
It's unsettling. The reason, though, and I think we kind of skipped over the reason why we're bringing this up.
Yes. Like,
because the speech, we've covered the speech, right?
Yeah.
And it's important to remind everybody what's going on, but it's 3 years old. What's happened is BYU they have this class that they are introducing that's going to be a required class for all freshmen. It's called BYU Foundations for Student Success,
which is not a dumb name for a class at all.
They apparently they tested it as a pilot program. So it has already sort of had a run this last semester, I think. And they've decided that it was a grand success.
Oh, things the pilot went so run well.
Was just, it was fantastic. One of the things that is listed in the syllabus that is a requirement that the students are going to be discussing is this talk by Jeffrey Holland.
Oh my God.
So
this is not going to go well.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. The young people, this is going to be taken by freshmen.
Yeah.
So they're straight out of high school. They're probably going to be a little timid, a little intimidated by the whole thing. They and they're Mormons at that, which means they are trained not to push back.
Right.
But they're also Gen Z, you know what I mean? Like those people are trained to push back and maybe a little too much. I'm going to just say it, but they are. Gen Z is ready to push back. This is the TikTok generation. Right. And I don't think this is going to go well. I think there are going to be, you know, cause all it takes is one or two people who, you know, have gay friends.
Right. Which is like everyone now.
Which is everyone now. And they're going to be like, this sucked.
Well, just polling of church membership these days and the general attitudes about gay people, right?
Like,
It's the general population of the church presently is kind of okay with gay people. They don't
not really care. So much so that. I just saw a graphic recently. I think it was from Washington Post, looking at various states in the United States and their attitudes about gay people.
Yeah.
LGBTQ plus people.
Yeah.
And then also looking at the percentage of those states that self-identify in those ways.
Right.
And while Utah doesn't self-identify, is on the lower end of or sort of, you know, on the low side of the median for how many people who self-identify as LGBTQ plus, it's on the very high end of people who support protections for LGBTQ plus people.
Right.
Like, it is above most Democrat states, which is very surprising to me.
Here's the deal. Like, as an organization, the Mormon Church is a huge promoter of family and family connections. I mean, it's like the center of the whole thing, right? Is you get sealed to your spouse for time and all eternity, and then your children are sealed to you, and you all, you know, have to live together forever. Yeah. And if that's your central message, and then all of a sudden little Tommy, you know, or little Jenny turns out to be gay.
Yeah.
Like, this is, it's hard to separate it out. And it, like, the turmoil that Mormon families used to feel before there was greater acceptance of gay and lesbian people in our society. Right.
Yeah.
It was horrible. The families were the people were just tearing them. Families were torn apart. Right.
How would you know about that, Frank?
But as society has sort of changed and the messaging from the church, while isn't super great about gay people, they haven't been as bad, I suppose, as they could have been.
Here's the problem with the church's messaging. It keeps flip-flopping.
It is. Yeah, it's mixed.
They keep saying things like, yes, we support protections. These are our brothers and sisters.
Right.
You can be gay and Mormon, and we will welcome you with open arms. All you have to do is just never have sex ever in your whole life or have sex with someone who's of the opposite sex and that you're not attracted to.
Right.
And then, you know, then you're fine. We're fine with you. And then they do a bunch of shit where they're like, we're not fine with you.
right.
at all. Right. And they keep doing that.
But there's so for, right. There's enough of the positive, though, that people have really glommed onto it, who've needed to. Right.
Right. Yeah. And because they all have
yeah.
a son, a daughter, a niece, a nephew, somebody.
You're these big Mormon families. You're yeah, you're right. There's yeah. someone.
Yeah, if you have 9 kids, guess what?
And so like so they've that's who they are, right? Is family, yeah. family, 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 family. And then so it doesn't surprise me, right? It and honestly, at this point, it doesn't surprise me that Mormons are just like, yeah, we don't really care like what you're saying. Like we care that it's negative and we don't like it, and it's pushed a lot of people out of the church, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people. And that's this. This is another one of these moments. This is a shelf breaking moment for a lot yeah. of people, I'm sure.
Yeah. This is not gonna go well for them.
Yeah.
This is not gonna go well.
And now it's the young people. Like they're gonna be sitting through this class. These are people who this is their next generation. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and so for however long of leaders, right. This is BY fucking you, right. This is yeah. where they're training up their elite.
Yeah.
And so like, and their elite, I don't think is gonna, I mean, maybe I'm too hopeful about this generation and where Mormonism, the population of Mormonism is at this point, but like it, they're going to lose a lot of people over this. Young people. And it's just like,
not only that, what they're doing is they're drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah.
In the wrong place.
Yeah.
And they don't see it. They don't know that they think they're winning by doing this. Right. They think this is a strong move in the right direction, and they're going to find out this is a bad idea, which is funny. They should have known, because the outrage when this speech happened was clamorous. And it wasn't just from people like us. It wasn't just from outside the church. It was people inside the church.
Baffled by it.
And this, you know, the message couldn't be clearer in terms of like making all the new students read this thing.
Ugh.
The speech itself referenced, I think it was the year before, their valedictorian his valedictorian That's speech right. and came out That's, as gay.
Yep.
Wisely waiting until after he got his diploma before he decided to come out. But Jeffrey Holland in the Musket speech references that.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I've got the quote right here. He says, if a student commandeers a graduation podium intended to represent everyone getting diplomas in order to announce his personal sexual orientation, what might another speaker feel free to announce the next year until eventually anything goes?
What the fuck is he talking about?
He's literally making the slippery slope argument, which is that's a fallacy. The slippery slope, that's the name, the official name of a logical fallacy.
Right
there.
Right.
But he
knows he is. He doesn't care. Right.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. So literally what he said was what might commencement come to mean or not mean if we push individual license over institutional dignity?
Oh my God. So he's all saying get these students under control.
Listen, you're not important. You're an individual. What's important here is the institution.
Right.
I'm making that explicit. Congratulations on coming to BYU.
Yeah. I wonder if, like, whose decision was it to push this? I mean, I guess we can't know, but like, somebody is like, yeah, that was a good speech. And the way to get people to forget about it is to like put it,
I mean,
or to get over it, to get over this, whatever controversy it was. It's just a doubled fucking down.
Yeah, the libs were mad about it. That means we're doing something right. So let's just get in there and codify this shit and make sure that everybody has to read it.
Oh, God. Well, it's this decision is causing a lot of pain. Once again, needlessly on the BYU campus. There's a group called Rainbow Collective.
Oh, God.
That's R-A-Y, big Y, in B-O-W, Rainbow.
Why, as in B-Y-U.
Yeah, exactly.
They use the Y as their as their short.
And so, the president of the Rainbow Collective, which it's what it sounds. It's a group for LGBTQ BYU students. They're speaking out about how harmful this is and how unwelcomed students are feeling. And it's not a good thing.
If any of you know a gay student at BYU, or if any of you are a gay student at BYU, we support you. We love you. Get the fuck out of BYU.
Yeah. There's better places.
And get out of the LDS church while you're at
it. Yeah. No, let's see. They issued a statement, Rainbow Collective did. They say, by including Holland's words in a class on BYU's mission, quote, insinuating that queer students lie outside the boundaries of the university's mission and vision, the speech perpetuates harm and undermines efforts to foster a sense of belonging.
Yeah, you don't belong. They're very clearly telling you don't belong.
Yeah, LGBTQ students are, quote, exhausted from pleading with BYU to recognize our humanity, to acknowledge our contributions to the campus and society at large. Despite our persistent efforts to express the harm that using this talk will cause, they continue to overlook our concerns.
Because they don't like you.
Yeah. I know.
They keep telling you overtly.
Right.
And you keep not leaving.
a little bit of blaming the victim there, but
I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying leave your abuser.
What I would say is when it starts to feel like abuse and it starts to feel that's probably a time to leave, or when it starts to feel just untenable, just get out. Right. Yeah. Like it is an option that is available. Right.
Even
you don't
if it feels like
have to put yourself through this, I think would be the message that you don't have to submit yourself to this.
Right.
And
even though it may be scary to leave and your family might not like it and you might have a scholarship there.
Right. Yeah.
You could make it work.
It's one of the few like truly affordable institutions out there.
You can make it work. All right, well, friends, I'm sure some of you will have something to say about this. Please feel free to write into us, podcast@thankgodimatheist.com,
or call and leave us a voicemail message. We'd love to hear from you. The telephone number is 424-666-8442.
Yeah, go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/TGIAtheist. Yes, Facebook still exists. And click the like button there.
And if you'd like to join one of our members only lounges, you can do so. Go to our website, thankgodimatheist.com/members-only.
Thanks so much to the Red Rock Hot Club for the use of their music.
And thanks to Gordon Johnston for the use of his music.
And thanks to all of y'all for tuning in. We sure do appreciate you.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.